Welcome to Brands and Campaigns, the stories and people behind clever marketing moves, powered by EKR. I'm your host, Camden Burnett, Creative Director and Head of Brand Strategy at EKR. So last episode, we talked about the berries and cream commercial, the famous, infamous, depending on how you feel about that song that gets stuck in your head. We talked with Winslow Dennis about who was the senior producer on that commercial. And so today I've got from our internal agency, from EKR, I've got Madeline, who is one of our art directors, who's joining us today to talk about the conversation with Winslow and the commercial. So thanks for being here on the show today, Madeline.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give the people a little bit of a background, a little rough, you know, how you got to where you're at, what your expertise is who are you?
Yeah, I graduated with my BFA, how long ago was that? It was about 4 or 5 years ago from now, from BYU Hawaii, and I specialize in graphic design. And since then, I have been working with Relic and EKR Advertising Agency. Started out as an intern, and I've worked my way up to an art director.
The question you have to always ask someone who went to BYU Hawaii, was it hard to focus on school, or was it pretty easy?
Honestly, it wasn't too bad because we have the weekends, or I don't know, we're right next to the ocean, so we can make plenty of time for the beach and living the Hawaii experience in addition to school. I didn't struggle with it too much anyway.
Nice. Cool. Well, yeah, you do a lot of good for us at the agency and have helped us on a lot of projects. And so glad to get your insight on anything creative, but especially something as unique and different as this berries and cream commercial. Do you remember this coming out originally? Or do you remember back in the day when this aired?
I don't. I know about it from when it kind of resurfaced on TikTok within the past couple of years, but I do not remember it airing previously.
So was TikTok the first time you were aware of it, or have you kind of knew about it but didn't weren't there when it first came out?
It sounded familiar. So okay. I knew that it was referencing something. It was being pulled up from previous commercials, but I don't remember sitting down at the TV and watching it.
Gotcha.
But it definitely striked a memory in me. And yeah.
A weird random memory that you don't know where it's, Yeah, it was funny. I was reading on Reddit recently. Someone their username has been deleted, so I don't know who it was, but in the Mandela Effect community, says Little Lad loves berries and cream ad for Starburst and not Skittles. They thought it was a Skittles ad. I remember it from 14 years ago. Everyone would sing that song, and I remember that I went and I bought Skittles specifically because of that ad, because it made me laugh. And now I went back to go try to find the commercial, and it's a Starburst ad. And they're all shocked. And people are in the comments, some of them are saying, it was always Starburst. And someone's like, no, I could have sworn it was Skittles too. I remember the specific package. And and then people are like, I think you're thinking of the, what's it called? The smoothie, the berry, the smoothie flavored Skittle. They're like, no, I remember a specific bag of berries and cream Skittles. So there's some Mandela Effect controversy on online. People could have sworn it was a Skittles ad sometimes, but yeah, so a goofy ad. And I lots of questions I want to get to today with the time we have. The first one being one of the things that Winslow talked about that was kind of a blessing in disguise, you could say, or a potential benefit, is that the client was not there on set. And now we want to be careful. We love our clients. It's not that we don't want their input, but sometimes when it becomes, when you're the one who's actually tasked with creating the creative, putting it all together and bringing it about, a lot of times because of the different hesitations or the different design by committee or things like that would happen with client input, sometimes things kind of get watered down. And Winslow felt like the fact that they couldn't make it to the shoot that day kind of gave him freedom to really just try different things that might have been, what are you doing? If the client was there, that ended up giving a really good, unique result. Any response to that? Do you think what's been your experience? And again, not that we're going to name names or point fingers at any clients or anything, but client involvement when it comes to creative, what do you feel like the right balance or the right relationship is in having clients help dictate what comes out in creative?
Yeah, I feel like most artists and graphic designers can relate to this to an extent, even if it's not client, but even an art director, creative director that is on set with you or maybe hovering over a project that you're doing, sometimes you can feel like you need to appease them and their goals, and you can kind of forget about the bigger goals of what you're actually trying to do with the product and what you're actually trying to achieve through the advertising. And so I totally relate to that. And I feel like a lot of artists will relate to that as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. What you talk about there makes me think about the importance of having a brief, right? Like it doesn't mean that a brief is necessarily going to mean that you're never going to have a disagreement or a different way of approaching with a client. Like there's still interpretation and some subjectivity. But if you can point back and say, hey, remember we were trying to accomplish this thing or this feel or get this message across or reach this audience, you can kind of point back to like why you're recommending and trying the things that you're trying. Of course, the client is the client, right? Like they're the ones that makes the final approval of things. But I feel like it's more productive to have a strategy-based debate, for lack of a better term, not that it's always like a heated debate, but to have a disagreement or a discussion based on strategy instead of just like, well, I like this, or my favorite color is blue, so put that in there, you know. So easier said than done, but I feel like that you've emphasized the importance of making sure you have a good solid brief and strategy in place beforehand. So another question I wanted to ask you, Madeline, is this commercial is obviously just kind of, the word random gets used a lot in different descriptions that you see about it. It's just so random. It's just so oddball and weird. And when it comes to like randomness, or like you could say like shock value, just like surprising unexpectedness, how do you feel like that plays as a strategy in advertising? Do you feel like there's any, like, is it always something worth trying? Do you feel like it's effective? Just very open-ended question, shock value and randomness in advertising. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's very effective because it's very memorable. You know, like if you have a generic ad for Starbursts and it talks about, you know, it just being a typical candy, then you're not going to remember it. You have to do something that's unique and different. Something that comes to mind to compare it to, I don't know if you remember in the Super Bowl this year, but there was the Reese's commercials,
yeah,
where they like freaked out over the fact that they're changing the Reese's. Someone like smashes their head into the wall. It's very extreme. And I feel like those extremes are memorable and they help you to kind of connect with the brand because they stand out from other brands. So I think it's effective. I don't necessarily think that it should be used in all cases, but mm-hmm. I do think that where appropriate in advertising, it could be a way to help you to stand out compared to your competitors.
Yeah, that can definitely be done. I have like a theory, or I don't know if it's a theory or just like a philosophy, whatever you want to call it. When it comes to shock value or randomness, unexpectedness in advertising, my theory or my little philosophy is that it works to the degree that you need to consider and think about a purchase before you make it. It works less well. So the other end of that spectrum, that means that to the degree that you don't need to think about it, like an impulse buy, it works especially well. You think about the Starburst commercial we're talking about, the Reese's one you just mentioned. Skittles has had a lot of weird, goofy ones. Do you remember Puppy Monkey Baby from Mountain Dew Kickstarter a few Super Bowls ago, with like this random puppy/monkey/baby. Anyways, Google that afterward. Super random, like nothing to do with the product, not talking about like, you know, how the sugar content or the price or nutritional value, just purely for memorability. A lot of those things that is listed are like candies, sodas, like something you might see in the checkout line at the store or like on a gas station when you need something quick. You're not sitting there debating for a long time and price comparing like candy bars, right? It's just kind of like, oh yeah, I should grab that. You might not even know what price it was. You just grabbed it knowing it's like, oh, it's a buck or two, whatever. And I feel like for those ones, the shock value of, oh yeah, berries and cream Starburst, or oh yeah, Puppy Monkey Baby, or that funny Reese's, that they have a caramel one now, don't they? Like that works in that sense. But you don't see a lot of shock value, crazy randomness for like car commercials or buying insurance or like law firms, like, I don't know, things that where you're like, I need to like kind of shop around and it's more of an investment and the purchase timeline takes longer, you know, like, and then maybe there's some examples out there you could show me that I'm wrong. And it's probably not a hard and fast rule, but in general, I feel like when you see those, it's usually for like impulse buy, low cost commodity type of or products or services. Right. I don't know. Response to that. Am I off on that? Is there any wisdom to that?
I totally agree. I think that with your brand, you recognize what tone you want to project, and maybe it could be lighthearted and fun. You know, it's a candy, it's colorful, so it can be a funny concept. But with cars, for example, you know, a lot of people when they're car shopping are looking for stability and a good price mm-hmm. and things like that. And to that note, I don't know if you remember those. I believe it was Kia, those Kia commercials with the, was it hamsters or gerbils? Do you remember that?
Oh,
they were like
yeah, yeah.
driving the cars.
That, yeah, mean, like the Kia Soul when they used to yes. advertise that. Yeah, those hamsters.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, not that Kia isn't like a solid car or anything like that, but I do think that nowadays on the internet, Kia drivers get a little bit of hate. They get a little bit of people make fun of them a little bit. You know what I mean? And I think that maybe there's a tie to the advertising of Kia, that it is a little, it was in the past anyway, had a little bit more of goofiness to it. And so that could maybe sway yeah. someone's perception of the people that are driving the car compared to a car that is advertised in a very sophisticated way. If
yeah,
that
yeah.
makes sense.
And we should distinguish, it doesn't mean that anything that's silly or funny is the same thing, is like in the same category as Berries and Cream Little Lad Guy. Because that, you can have like a funny ad that was like, had a message behind it, or was kind of heartfelt, or like, or was clever in trying to say something. But there are some, again, you need to go watch Puppy Monkey Baby. It is just like so entirely random, where this creature comes in saying Puppy Monkey Baby and hands him a Mountain Dew Kickstarter. Like, it's just purely for like, what the heck was that commercial? Like, just so you remember and talk about it after. That's a category that I think that's what I'm trying to like define here. And so, yeah, I think about another example, which I don't know if you remember this one. It's been a long time since this one aired, but E-Trade, many Super Bowls ago, which is like for investment, they had like the dancing chimpanzee that had an E-Trade shirt, and it was kind of silly and goofy and random, but their whole message was like, it was clever that they had spent that much money on a Super Bowl commercial for something so random, because that is part of like their message. Anyways, I won't dive into that too deep right now, but anyways, randomness. Yes, I think you've I'm over speaking to it now, but there is a place for it, but you got to make sure it's going to be a type of a product or service, a brand that you're okay with just simple recall and being attached to that randomness. If it's something people, yeah, are trying to gain trust, or they're asking for like their, you know, investment or a long-term commitment or things like that, probably not as good of an idea, I would imagine. So another question for you. I've been thinking about this in my own work a little bit lately, as I tried to develop some creative concepts for clients, and talking about, you know, we throw the word campaign around a lot, and that kind of gets a little bit, it's kind of been stretched in many different ways, where the word campaign can mean a lot of different things to different people now. But in general, if I'm going to define campaign as being a campaign is more than just a one-off idea, like it's a multi-channel. Like if I have a campaign concept, it's something that I can run across social, a TV commercial, put on my website. Like it's something that has legs to have multiple iterations that tie up to it. You know, like the Snickers bar, you're not you when you're hungry. That's a campaign, because there's multiple ads related to that. You could do video, you could do print. I built this concept that like Snickers fuels you and fills you up better than other candy bars does. Anyways, that's a campaign. Berries and Cream was this really viral one-off that was just like, it wasn't what I would say a campaign. I mean, maybe you could say it was part of the Berries and Cream like campaign, in the sense that they had other ads or promotions related to it, but there wasn't like a bunch of little lad stuff that popped up for like that year. There wasn't, you know, more goofy songs that were made. I shouldn't say one-off. There was that second video of the little lad teaching you how to do the little lad dance. So I guess there was another iteration, but like it was kind of a one-off. And so my question, my long roundabout way to get into the question is, what do you think the time and place is when like, when do you need to have like a campaign versus when is it a good idea to just focus on like a one-off commercial or a one-off ad? Like, yeah. Is there, what's your thought about that? I know it's not an easy question to answer probably, but any thoughts related to that? Can you help steer me so I can wrap my head around that for
yes.
my clients? Yeah.
Right. Right. No, that's a really good question. I think it's important to recognize the shelf life of different advertisings. So, for example, I can see if they were to push Berries and Cream across all ads, billboards, digital ads, things like that, how people could go from being intrigued to being kind of annoyed, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because there's, I think that there's this, there's also this thing where there are trends on TikTok, on social media and advertising. And once it hits a certain audience and it becomes more mainstream, then people become less interested in it and more annoyed by it, you know? And so I think you have to gauge a little bit about how much you want to scale the campaign and how, who you want it to hit. Do you want it to hit your target audience? Do you want it to go viral like the berries and cream? And throughout the run of that campaign, check the health of, you know, the success of who it's reaching and how your target audience feels about it, things like that. But yeah, I do think that it depends on your intentions with the marketing altogether. Long answer short.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Can you imagine pitching that ad to the client? Like trying to, they're like, hey, we want to promote this new flavor of Starburst. Like that's the, you know, the direction they send you in. And they're like, we want to get, dress this guy up in this little outfit and have him do this little dance and sing this little song. Like, I can't, I'm just imagining what that pitch with that meeting. Well, according to Winslow, it was lots of meetings, but like multiple times, like sing that little song and do your little dance and try to explain. I could just, again, I wasn't a fly on the wall, but try to think like, okay, well, are you talking about like, I guess in hindsight though, it's not, you can, it's called berries and cream. So it's pretty self-explanatory. It tastes like berries and cream. It's candy. There's not a whole lot to say about it. So I guess other than, I guess it kind of goes back to what I was saying before. Like it gives, if you're going to promote a candy, other than saying like, hey, this is out now, go buy it. Like just put it out on the screen. It's kind of free to just do whatever you can to be memorable. Right. And so I'm just trying to imagine like, yeah, how trying to sell that, like, well, we're not missing any super important elements you want to say about it other than it's berries and cream and it's for sale now. But yeah, you didn't ask for all this weird stuff, but trust me, it's going to be memorable and people are going to get a kick out of this.
Right.
You got to have trust of the client, I guess.
And I think that when you have such a big brand like Starburst, you, or Reese's, for example, like you have a lot more opportunity to be creative because people know who you are. You're not bringing awareness so much. You are kind of expanding your brand identity and you're expanding a relationship with your audience and your customers. And, you know, cause I don't know, most people, at least in America, know who, what Starburst is. They've had Starburst, they've tried Starburst. So it's not like they need to do a lot of that explanatory advertising so much as be memorable and make a connection.
Yeah. It was purely for brand awareness. It wasn't trying to compare or contrast to someone else or trying to, yeah, it was just, you're gonna think of this next time you're passing the candy aisle.
Right.
I heard a quote recently on a podcast and I feel bad that I'm not going to be able to give credit to who it was because I honestly don't remember where I was, who was saying it. So it's like this quote that lives in my head now, not attached to a source. So forgive me if this was you who said this, but there is a difference between what's funny and what is a funny ad. Oh, I remember who it was. It was the VP of marketing for Liquid Death was on a podcast I was listening to. And he said, like, a lot of times you'll say, oh, yeah, it's a funny, yeah. Like, you get the ad and see how it's funny. But you're like, outside of it being an advertisement and not compared to other ads, is it funny? And there are sometimes that there's ads where you're like, oh, it's a funny ad, the Super Bowl. But you're like, if you just saw that not looking and evaluating as an ad, would you laugh at it? And not all the time. And so I think there's this example of the Starburst commercial makes me think about that, where there are some things that you might be like, oh, yeah, the client thinks that, yeah, chuckle at that, and it's kind of clever and stuff. But a lot of it can just seem kind of forced or contrived or not really that funny if it's still too much of like an ad. That makes sense.
Right.
And so that doesn't mean that there's any perfect formula or secret sauce to make sure you're actually being genuine funny. That's still something you got to kind of figure out and feel out, and takes a talent. But that's something I was thinking about of as I work on things for clients, is don't just make something that I think is a funny ad. Is it actually funny? And those ones that are actually funny are going to do better as an ad or as a piece of content or whatever related to that. And so I guess that's just my thought of the day. I don't know. That's not really a question for you or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I totally agree. I think that a lot of times with consumers and advertising, you almost don't like the advertisers because they're trying to sell something to you. And so a lot of times when you're seeing advertising, you are already sitting in a place of skepticism. And so once they're able to break that wall of we're not just advertising, like this is relatable, this is something that you would laugh at, not just as an ad, like you said, is when it starts to last the test of time. And like berries and cream, where however many years later, we're still talking about it, you know, because it's not just an ad. It's at this point become, it's just funny in itself.
Yeah, to have a resurgence that long after it was actually an ad is like this cultural, nostalgic, this little icon of this little lad, they call him.
Right. It's funny as someone in advertising too, thinking about, okay, what am I making now that could be resurfaced in the future? It's almost a little scary, honestly, because it got so viral. So I don't know. That's interesting for advertisers in general, thinking about the virality of what you could be doing. And yeah, it's interesting. It's a fun thing to think about. It's a little bit of you have to wrap your head around it all, but yeah, it's interesting.
For sure. And it's always easier to look at it kind of in hindsight, right? We're from the position right now, we're looking back on something that happened and evaluating why it worked or it didn't work or what could have been better. But like in the moment making it, you're figuring it out as you go and trying to rely on best practice and some inspiration. But yeah, that's what we do. And I enjoy the game, but it's always easier to kind of evaluate, and everyone has their opinion after the fact. And isn't that what's hard too? Is like, we know working in the industry, we know there are some things that are like best practice or some ways to approach things or ways to be strategic. We know there is a craft, there is a talent involved, but no matter what it is, there's never been a piece of branding, advertising, design that's ever come out that someone won't have a critique of, where they're like, oh, that's actually not that good for this reason. There's going to be, and so it's like, the subjective nature of it, that's sometimes hard to balance internally for ourselves, right? And then also to help the client, like they're paying us to do something they can't do themselves. That's why they're coming to us. But yet you have to find that balance where you're not ripping it out of their hands and telling them like, you know, hey, it's our job now. Like you want to let them feel like they're involved in it. But at the same time, it's like, well, we're doing something you can't do yourself. If you wanted to do it yourself, you would have done it. And so it's hard. That's a challenge.
Right. No, and I've experienced that a lot within the design world as well, where you'll make a logo or you'll see a logo, or this happens a lot of times at museums, especially like modern art, where you see a piece and you think, oh, I could do that easy. That would take me like 20 minutes. And people will feel like they could be the creator in branding or whatever it is, but they're seeing the finished product of things. They're not seeing the full process that got to that point. They're not, you know, living in and seeing all of the little details that got there. So when you see something like berries and cream and seeing it, its success, you can think, oh, I can make something like that, but in a different realm. I'm like, okay, let's pull it back a little bit. I don't know if you actually, you know, it's harder than it looks. There's a lot more details that go into it than just what you're seeing in the final result.
Yeah. Well, plus people try to copycat. Like, oh, that was, I could do something like that. And then someone goes make a knockoff that's almost the exact same kind of ad and it doesn't hit the same. Cause it's like, well, that already happened. Like you kind of have to do your own thing. You can't just rewash and repeat someone else's process or style or commercial. And so, yeah, it's funny you bring up modern art classic art. I mean, because I think this isn't the topic of this episode necessarily, but like, I think that also lends itself to is indicative of the power of brand, because artists have their own brands. Like you think of like, Picasso, just a, you know, well-known famous artist, had skill in a certain style and stuff. But like toward the end of his life, end of his like career, if like Picasso would have just like taken a bucket of paint and like thrown it on a canvas and wrote his name on it, it would have been worth tons of money because Picasso did it. And so like, even if he didn't actually exhibit what he considered like skill, his brand and knowing what he was about and his cachet, anything he produced would have been worth a lot of money, right? It's because like the brand of it. And you see that a lot with, especially with like, you know, celebrities and influencers and stuff, like powerful brands, usually, you know, a good brand can only be good because it has a good product or service, of course. But then when they get so much respect or notoriety as their brand, anything they see is seen through that lens as being that awesome. And that's where you get like the people get mad about like iPhones, because it's like, oh yeah, throw a different camera on it and release it every year. It's the same phone. I'm not saying that's true, but that's what people kind of get frustrated about. Like, well, yeah, it's Apple, so you can charge lots of money for it. But it's like, aren't you giving us the same phone every year? I don't know.
100%. A lot of it, like there is a final result, but a lot of it is also the creators themselves. Another artist that comes to mind is Jackson Pollock, where, he has a lot of like splatter art, and people get mad that aren't necessarily in the art world or art lovers, because he's famous and has earned a lot of money through this way of creating art that most people could do themselves. And so, but they're not him.
But they wasn't your brand. Yeah.
It's right. They haven't done the work to create the brand that has become this big thing. And it's a lot harder than you'd think, because you could go out and you could make that too, but are you going to get as famous as him?
Yeah,
probably
you
not.
You could create this that something that looks the same, but it's not a Jackson Pollock. It's just a splatter painting. His is a Jackson Pollock painting. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Brand. I love it.
Something else. This is funny. Okay. But it comes to mind. Another part of brand within celebrities, because you mentioned celebrities, is their brand identity and what they have been able to promote and make that has been based off of their brand. A big one is the Kardashians. They have a lot of different makeup brands, clothing brands, things like that, but they are like big businesses, and not just because they're famous, but because a lot of people are sold onto their brand and to their brand identity. So not saying I'm a Kardashian fan or anything, hate on them all you want, but I'm just saying that the brand that they have cultivated has helped them to be as iconic as they have been, and helped them to have these successful businesses. Yeah. In addition to like the products, it's not just the fame and it's not just the name, but it's also the being able to contain the brand and have it last as long as it has. That's just one example. And there's a lot of celebrities that do that as well. But
Kardashians are like the textbook, like the picture in the dictionary next to influencer. Like they were like, I don't know if they're saying that they're the first, like celebrities have always had influence and stuff, but like they purely were like, because of their personal brand, influenced people to buy stuff, and now including their own products. So so-and-so comes out with Kylie had like her makeup line that was like instantly like worth $1 billion or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good example. Good stuff. Good insight. Any advice for the podcast? We're still relatively new, but we're not like new. And we want to grow our followers. You know, we gotta grind. We gotta promote. By the way, like and subscribe if you're listening to this. But what do we need to do as a podcast for this brand? What can we do, do you think, to help get this out? Is there an audience for this? Am I speaking to the wind, or is there an audience for this kind of content?
Oh, 100%. I've said this before, but on my social media, for example, on my Instagram, on my Explore feed, I am in graphic design world, and a lot of my content is graphic design related, but I also get a lot of branding content too. Same with TikTok. The algorithm will kind of do its work for you. And so I get a lot of graphic design related content. And in addition to that, I do get some podcast snippets. And so, you know, you don't have to do a ton of work when it comes to social media, because there's already an algorithm in place that will like support. But I 100%, if I'm seeing a podcast show up, I've found a lot of podcasts through social media, just through snippets of audio and things like that. I don't know if you can think of those videos where like half of the screen is is audio, and then half of the screen is like those satisfying videos. Yeah, yeah. Those get me every time, but they have gotten me like hooked on certain podcasts or things like that, because the audio comes from someplace else. Anyway, but I think that, I think the power of social media in the podcast world is really a good marketing tool.
It's either it's like a satisfying, an aesthetically pleasing video, or it's Subway Surfers.
Oh, yeah. Yep, it's like the animated car videos.
Yeah, what is that? I gotta go play that game. It's more of an advertisement for that car game than anything else. I want to go fly through those tunnels and stuff.
Yeah,
no, that's same. Funny. The cultural random things we all can relate to, like we don't like talk about, but like we've all seen that random car. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah,
good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us, Madeline. Is there anything that you want to like let us know that you're up to? Anything? I guess the first question is, if people want to contact you or follow you, what's the best way to get in touch with you or follow you?
Yeah. I guess I can plug my Instagram handle.
Plug it.
Which is funny, because it's Baby Madeline. So it's been like that for a while. But it's Baby with two Y's and then Madeline. But kind of funny.
Baby Madeline. I feel like maybe there's a story there. Is that just to be a mystery?
Okay, it's a long story, but basically every single year for Halloween, I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. I'm usually multiple costumes, but one year, like 10 years ago, I was a baby and I got a bald cap, but the cap that I got came in like a set of like 10 bald caps. And so then from that moment, I made it a goal every single year to be a bald character for Halloween. So since then, I've been like Shrek. I've been Dr. Phil, Mr. Clean. I've been a lot of bald characters for Halloween. Mr. Worldwide himself.
So you still got the bald caps?
Oh yeah, I saw the bald caps. Well, nice. I've actually gone through most of them. I need to replenish my stock. But so it started out with that because then people started calling me Baby Madeline, and so then I just changed my Instagram handle to it.
But, there you go. That's your brand. There you go.
Yep.
Nice. Okay, check you out, Baby Madeline. What kind of stuff do you post there?
Oh, nothing special.
Just your life.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Cool. I do have my link in my bio to my Behance account, so sometimes people will message me on Behance for freelance work, but nice. I will admit this agency is keeping me busy. I'm not taking on too much freelance work.
Yeah, and that's the thing I want to make sure, hopefully we're far enough. If you followed the show for a little bit, obviously we mentioned this is a podcast powered by EKR, the agency where Madeline and I and some of our other guests we've had on work, and we don't want to make this a shameless plug for our agency, but we do offer a lot of these services, right? We offer creative and branding services along with other marketing fulfillment. So if you like what we talk about, if you think we know anything we're talking about and not totally out there and want to work with us, we think we can do some good for you. And so yeah, EKR is the agency. You can reach me at Camden at ekragency.com. Madeline is there as well, who can be your art director. You've had Corey on. Adam has been on the podcast. So we are looking for great opportunities to attach strategy to creative and do some good things. So although that's not the main focus of this podcast, that's my first kind of shameless plug for the agency is we would love to work with you and help figure out what we can do for you and your brand. Anything else? Any parting words of wisdom? Any thoughts, Madeline? Should we call it a wrap?
No, I feel solid about it.
Awesome. Okay. Well, go eat some Starburst. Go try to get the Little Lad song out of your head or not. You can enjoy it in your head. Thanks for joining with us. And those who have listened, wherever you are, thanks for tuning in. Again, please give us a subscribe, a like, share, a review. Anything like that would be much appreciated and help expand the reach of the podcast. We look forward to bringing you more content. We'll see you next time.